The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PlayUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 183. Excited to have Mark Fitzgerald with us today. Mark is the head strength coach for the Anaheim Ducks. We have a lot of mutual friends, never had a chance to really connect before this episode, but it's obvious why we have a lot of friends. We have a lot of things in common, and a guy that's doing it the right way, in my opinion, doing it at a high, high level there with Anaheim and his own business and all those things. And so real excited to dive into this one. We talk about his journey. We talk about the most challenging aspect of managing, an NHL team and all that goes into that with travel and number of games and all that. We talk about a typical training week. And we talk a little bit about how he's been able to balance being an entrepreneur with being a strength coach, which is what you all know my book is about and a lot of the things that I think are important for strength coaches to do. And so I know you're going to get a ton out of this episode. Before we do, we want to recognize one of our sponsors, Ignition APG. Ignition's been with us all for multiple years here, and it's just a company, a sports performance company based in Cincinnati, Ohio. Really good friends of mine, doing a lot of things, having their hands in a lot of cookie jars. They do training. They have products, they have supplements, and everything that they do it at a high, high level. They're about to go into their combine prep program, which is one of the best in the country, in my opinion. They do a great job. I don't think there's a program out there that's doing more with guys that are on the fringe, guys that maybe weren't the highest guys coming out of college, but then turn around and each one of them are making an NFL roster and contributing in a big way and really helping their status by going in and training there. They recently just redid their facility, which it's been fantastic to through the podcast and seeing a lot of our sponsors, partner up on things or work together or see how many of you have put rooms together where you've put Sorinex in and play flooring in and all those things that put Elite Form in. I think it's fantastic when I see that happening because I don't put anything on the show or recommend anything that I don't believe in. And I believe in these guys. I believe in their mission. I think they do it the right way with mind, body, and spirit. One of my favorite things that I did while I was in Cincinnati was go out with these guys and feed the homeless, walk the streets of Cincinnati and provide gloves and coats and scarves and provide a meal it's something that they teach and preach in their combine program and with their athletes to give back to their communities and it's noticeable that it has the impact because of seeing what these guys do once they leave the program. Make sure you follow them on Facebook. They're at Ignition APG. The same on Twitter and Instagram. It's just a great source of motivation each and every week. And as strength coaches, that's all we can do is try to make an impact on our athletes' lives and our communities and all those things. And Ignition does that. So make sure to check them out. Sit back, enjoy this episode with Mark Fitzgerald, and we'll see you on the other side. Hey, guys, welcome back. Excited to have Mark Fitzgerald with us. Mark's the head strength coach with Anaheim Ducks. And, we got connected by a mutual friend with Brett Bartholomew and just travel in the same circles and really getting the first chance to talk face to face, but heard a lot about him and watched him from afar and doing some fantastic things out there in Anaheim. So man, appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, definitely appreciate you having me. Looking forward to chatting.
Mark, let's you know, for the guys that don't know you maybe as well, kind of go into your background a little bit. What got you into strength and conditioning, and then, you know, the journey that you've taken to get to Anaheim there?
You know what? I got into strength and conditioning. I had two older brothers who used to whoop me pretty good, and the middle one, who I'm really, really close with, you know, he got me into it almost forcefully. You know, he was big into it and took me to the gym and let me pin myself under a 45-pound bar for day one, and, you know, made me realize, hey, this is hard, but it's fun and it's worth it, you know. So he definitely introduced me to it, which I'm forever grateful for. I definitely return the favor to him now. He's a firefighter, so I help him train with he goes into those fire fit competitions and what have you. So it's enjoyable now because I get to return the favor. I think from there it was always – you know, I was always a bigger kid, so it helped, you know, being big and strong, you know, and that's something that, you know, as you've spoken about, as many of us spoken about, it's a nice escape. You know, the iron doesn't talk back, and it's a good way to kind of, you know, release frustration or whatever you want to call it as a young guy.
Right.
From there, I met some really influential coaches that kind of said, you know, hey, maybe you should start playing football. Which I did. Obviously, in the hockey world now, it's hockey 24/7. But I'm originally a football player, Canadian football player. You know, so that sport kind of opened the door where, hey, you better be lifting. You know, you better be strong. You better be able to move. So that was, you know, and I was kind of good at it. You know, which always helps too. It makes the transition a little bit easier. So got into it there. Played football in high school. Was fortunate to be on a really good team. Got recruited for some Canadian schools, and really fell in love with it in university, and really started, like, you know, we were training 5-6 days a week, running track. It was just, I think I liked the training part more than I liked the actual playing, you know, because our season's so short. You know, and that's, it kind of sparked it from there. I graduated and went home, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. My eldest brother's a police officer, you know, so I figured, I'd jump into one of those, you know, a firefighter or a cop. They're noble jobs, and, you know, there's suiting with guys like us who play on teams and what have you. But you know what? I started training some kids and coaching football, and, you know, it just kept going and going and going. And a hockey guy from my town, Whitby, Ontario, Canada, is nothing but hockey. I think there's 140,000 people, and there's about 15 hockey rinks. So that's just gives you an idea of how mental it is. And a guy named Adam Foote, who was an Olympian, Stanley Cup champion, his name is on the sign for Whitby. He called me up and he said he heard some good things and was going to give me an opportunity. And went in, had an interview with him, and it just kind of spawned from there. My first client is, you know, one of the best, you know, Hall of Fame eventually hockey players there is. So I mean, I was so green and not ready for that, but right. Like you say, it's you don't feel like you're ready for all the opportunities that you get. You just gotta do it, you know, whether you fake it till you make it, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But it was interesting because you know, that really opened the door in the hockey world, because, you know, being a football guy, a lot of those hockey guys didn't want to train with me because I looked like a football player, you know. But I told this story to my staff. You know, at one point I was so frustrated because none of them would listen to me. And I said, you know what, I'm going to work out with you guys today. You know, we started doing some hang cleans or some power cleans or something. And I was, you know, still pretty strong at the time for myself anyway. So I was just, you know, I put 225 or 275 in the bar, and I was hang cleaning it, and the hockey guys are looking at me going, how the hell do you do that? Why can't we do that? I'm like, well, maybe you should start listening to me then, you know. So I had to go full on meathead to them and say, hey, look, I know what I'm doing, and you should probably listen to me, you know. And that's not something I would do now, but
sure.
At the time it was like, you know, I didn't know a better way to get their attention. So, you know, from there, I think the door just, the floodgates kind of opened. I was bringing something different to the hockey market at the time, where it was a lot of speed ladders and Bosu balls. And I mean, I didn't think I was doing anything different, because training is training,
right?
You know, and we were sprinting, we were doing stuff that was uncomfortable. I was getting them off their bikes and making them lift, and it was working. Well, obviously it works, you know? So it's from there, I got some opportunities in junior hockey, which is like the feeder league to the professional, and did a good job there. Got a call from the Toronto Maple Leafs one day, which is, you know, the biggest team in hockey, and had nailed the interview. And, you know, it spent 6 years there and just kind of blew up from there. And my own business, it was, I've had for about 10 years now, and it's just same thing, steadily grown. I'd have guys that used to train in my basement a long, long time ago. And it's, again, so fortunate that the guys that I do have are so loyal. I've had one pro guy for almost 10 years now, you know, so it's someone I've taken through his whole career, which is, I know, to me is pretty neat. You see them go, he just had his first kid, and, you know, you see them kind of graduate through those stages of life and train at the same time. It's massively rewarding. So long story, I know, but that's kind of my broken road journey.
No, that's awesome, man. Well, you know, when you fake it till you make it, and I had a similar path, as you know. I mean, working with Kansas City Royals, I just got kind of thrown out there, and you have to step up, and you have to have confidence, and you have to be able to lead men or lead women, and that takes a certain type of persona. But when you do that, there's lots of opportunity to make mistakes, you know, along the way. So what's maybe the biggest mistake you've made, and kind of how you learn from it?
I think there's a couple things. I think the first one is listen more. That's one where I think it's a product of being young as well. And I still consider myself young. I'm in my 30s, but I just think I'm a better listener now. I wait before I speak. You know, I don't jump to conclusions. I try not to say never. You know, just little things like that where I find that, you know, the young coaches that I work with who, you know, are so stuck with absolutes. This always means this. No, it doesn't. I've seen it go the other way. Right. Maybe just one time, but that's, for me, that's all I need. You know, so I think that's a big part of coaching and making mistakes, which you should make. And then listening to your athletes and really listening and trusting what you see. Because there's nothing more valuable than what you see in the gym. You know, I do a lot of remote programming now, which is great. I appreciate the opportunity, but it's so hard because asking someone how you're feeling, you know, every morning and getting a text message back, it's so hard to really get a grasp on stuff. So you have to ask good questions. And I think the other one that goes along with the same thing, trusting your gut, is getting things on paper. I've been, unfortunately, not a victim, but I've been experienced in that regard where someone says something that they're going to do something and pay you X, Y, and Z, and you do the work and the pay doesn't come. So, yeah, I think I'm probably a little more cynical now with my staff and, you know, hey, we got this great opportunity. Yeah, I'll believe it when I'm signing it. So I think those are probably two, you know, couple big things that I made mistakes on early, and getting excited about something before it was on paper in front of me. But again, I think it's a maturity thing too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's so many things to dig in there. You know, with your current role, you know, at Anaheim, I mean, and with Toronto, and kind of going from business and up through the ranks. You know, what's maybe the most challenging aspect of your job now? You know, with working with the elite hockey players that you do?
You know what? I think our schedule is probably the biggest challenge. Our first half of the year here, we have 41 games in 85 days, which is pretty ridiculous because of the World Cup. And every team this year gets a 5-day bye week because of that World Cup. So the schedule is that much more condensed. So we really... You know, we really have to be smart about when we push, when we rest, nutrition, supplementation, all that stuff has to be so much more finely tuned, I think, to make sure that we come out of those chunk of games with, you know, a good record and putting ourselves in a good position for the back half of the year leading up to the playoffs. You know, so I think the schedule is hugely challenging right now because you know, it everybody's going through it, so I can't cry about it necessarily. Right. But with our, you know, our travel as well, like everywhere we go is a 5-hour flight, you know, so it's taking all those things into account, and, you know, we still got to lift, we still got to train, we still got to push ourselves in practice, and we have a coach who likes to skate, and it's great because it makes our guys, you know, builds up that resiliency to skating. We're a fast moving team, and we move the puck fast, so that those are all huge things, and I think my job is just to make sure that, you know, we're making sure our athletes are resilient enough to put up with all that travel and the games and the practices and what have you. So I think that's probably the biggest challenge currently, and hopefully it'll get a little bit better because we do have some, you know, January is not quite as bad, so hopefully it's going to take some time in January to kind of get ready for the back half and the playoffs and what have you, but there's not a lot of time.
Yeah. Well, you know, hockey's one of those sports that I've always been intrigued by. I never really grew up around it, and my son played it for a while, and you know, it's not like, you know, I have some experience in pro baseball or, you know, soccer and some of these other sports that you know, basketball, that play multiple games throughout the week. You know, this is full contact. This is like, you know, football on ice, essentially. And, yeah. You know, you're getting into a car accident 2 or 3 times a week, you know, and so what does a typical training week look like, you know, and it's a long season. What's a typical training week look like in season? What's a typical training week look out of season?
Starting with in season, like, so for this week, it's a little bit lighter. So we got home yesterday. We practice today, play Tuesday, practice Wednesday, play Thursday, day off Friday, practice Saturday, play Sunday. So for me, our time to work, our time to lift is post game, which sounds kind of weird, but it's really, you know, say if we lift this morning, guys are going to be sore tomorrow.
Right.
So I can't have them sore going into a game. Sure. You know, so for this morning, it'll be more of a movement focused and elongated warm up. We'll make them do some hip opening drills and make them do some thoracic spine stuff. We'll still move, but there won't be a whole lot of lifting going on. There might be some jumping and some med ball work or what have you. But it'll be short, and it'll be more nervous system stuff, waking them up. After the game, we'll get in 20-25 minute lift. That'll be our muscle work, really. That's what I call it. So we'll get that, you know, 8 to 12 rep range for a lot of stuff. You know, we'll squat a little bit, we'll single leg squat, we'll RDL, we'll do stuff, you know, compound basic movements, some push pull stuff, and some conditioning. We'll condition with the guys who play X amount of time. So our real high minute guys, so our guys who are playing 24 to 30 minutes a night, which is a ton. 30 is a really, no one really plays 30, but, those guys won't condition because they'll do more recovery type bike rides or what have you. But the guys who don't play as much, maybe play 7 minutes, 8 minutes, I call it, like, we'll top up their conditioning. Right. So we'll add in either some sprint work or some longer efforts to make sure that their aerobic and anaerobic are where they need to be, just in case they play longer, and to really keep them ready for the remainder of the year. So that's what our, you know, we'll do that on Tuesday and Thursday this week. We'll probably do a harder lift on Thursday because they have the day off Friday. We'll move around a little bit on the Saturday as well. We might do some more ballistic stuff but then, you know, Sunday's against LA, which is our biggest rival, so they beat the piss out of each other. So I got to be conscious of that as well, because that Sunday lift might be not quite as intense because it's a battle for those guys. So that's what a typical week would look like, even though there is no real typical week. But I really try to get in my quality work post game. And yeah, guys are tired, but we've created a culture here now with our head coach that we lift after games. You know, we're in the gym every day, which is all you can really ask for from a coach.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. I don't know if we were talking about it off camera or on, but we were talking about leadership and creating culture. And, you know, I would imagine, I mean, just, you know, as a football player, you know, after a game when I'm dog tired, you know, trying to come in and get a real solid lift in, that's challenging mentally and physically. How do you, you know, how did you go about, and I mean, obviously it's probably fairly commonplace in the league, I would imagine, but how do you, you know, go about creating that culture to where they want to come in and they want to push a little weight and stay in, you know, an elite shape going in through a long season?
Well, again, I think I'm lucky. I said that off camera that we have a really good group of guys, and I think that's a big part of it. And we were talking a little bit off camera, young coaches and what have you, and the big thing is trust. I feel like I've earned their trust. You know, when they ask questions, I do my best to answer them honestly. And when I don't know, I say I don't know. And I say, you know what, I'll find out that answer. I'll reach out to, you know, someone in my network or someone within the team network, and we'll get that answer. You know, and I don't always have the answer. I think they appreciate that too. You know, if they ask me something, I say, you know what, I don't know. But I'll give them my opinion. And then my opinion, which is going to be the best thing for them. I think my job as a coach is to be here for them. You know, obviously I'm here, I work for the team, but really I feel like I work for them. You know, I work for their longevity and performance and what have you. So I think the trust factor is huge, and I think you gain that from what they see every day. They see you working, they see you dedicated to your craft and what you do and how much you care. Right. You know, I think that's paramount. They don't know how much you know until you know how much you care. You know, that's an old Boyle saying, but it's true. Right. It's very true, I find.
Well, you know, I want to dig into that a little bit deeper, because, I mean, as a coach, it's easy sometimes to coach the kids that want to be coached. You know, it's mm-hmm. easy to coach the kids that like you or you like them. But when you're dealing with, you know, an athlete that just isn't buying into that, you know, they haven't drank the Kool-Aid yet. Mm-hmm. You know, what's, you know, you don't have to be specific in terms of what specific player or whatever, but, you know, when you've dealt with that athlete that just, they're not responding to you, you're not responding to them, you know, how have you gone about getting that athlete into the weight room to do what needs to be done without dangling the carrot in front of them like, I'm going to fine you, you know?
Yeah, you know what? The fine definitely doesn't work around here. Yeah. There's no amount of money, it seems like. You know, I think it's just being creative. You know, not every guy is going to want to get in here and put a bar on their back and you know, and crush weights, even though that's, I like doing that, but it's, you know, you have to get creative with what you do. I mean, there's 23 guys here today and they all don't do the same stuff. You know, it's, I find that paying attention to detail, paying attention, asking good questions, you know, I find myself personally connecting with their coaches in the off season, whereas unfortunately a lot of coaches in hockey, you know, well, I shouldn't say that, but I've heard things about guys not wanting to connect with those private coaches, and myself coming from being a private coach, I loved it when team coaches reached out, because it just showed, you know, check your ego. The focus is the athlete, not you, not me. The focus is the athlete. So though, you know, specifically doing that has helped me get through to athletes. Hey, I spoke to your coach from, you know, Timbuktu. Great guy. We're on the same page. Right. You know, so, oh, okay. Oh, you spoke to him? Really? Okay. So that really, I find that really helps, because that's someone that they trust. And, you know, if I can create a relationship outside, and really it's, I love doing it. I mean, not to get too far off, but I was just in Ohio and I love trying to find strength coaches and gyms that I haven't met. Maybe I've met them online or whatever. So I ran into Anthony Donskoff. Yeah. I don't know if you know that name at all.
Yeah,
fantastic guy, intense as hell. And I said, hey, can I come by and lift? And so I did and went by his place and lifted. And we had a coffee the next day. Could have talked to him for hours. You know, it was great. And I love doing that when I go around, you know, find different spots and always go and visit coaches, see facilities. And I'm open-minded just because I love to learn and I love to meet other coaches and see how they do it. So, yeah, going back to the athlete, I think it's just a matter of, you know, finding a way to get trust and being genuine about it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think, you know, sometimes having worked in pro football, pro baseball, you know, sometimes you really aren't. You know, it's getting to a point where, you know, the offseason is so small that a lot of times those guys are their strength coach. They are their coach. You know, they are the person that they view as their, as their strength coach, and you're just the guy that works for the team, and balancing that, you know, to maintain that relationship is an art that must be developed. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
It's cutting out.
The offseason. Better now?
Yeah, you're good now. Thanks.
I think the offseason stuff too is, and that's why I love on the private side is, it's a family. Like we have at ETS we have a family. You know, I've been to my guys' weddings. I've held their kids. They've held mine. It's a family, and then you know I try to recreate that environment here, where I don't think that happens on every team. And that's not to speak ill of anybody. I just don't think it does. Sure. And I don't think a lot of coaches see the value in that. They see it more as, you know, whistleblowing and holding the clipboard. And you know, athletes now, in my opinion, are different, and you have to treat them differently. I do less yelling and more listening, you know, and that's a huge piece of success, I think, that a lot of coaches don't understand. It's not, I know lots of good X's and O's strength coaches, programmers and whatever,
sure,
who don't have a job and or can't keep a gym busy.
Right.
You know, and I lean more towards, and your book speaks to it, which I re-listened to a couple chapters yesterday on the plane, and it's so funny because it's, if you don't have those three aspects, if you're not an entrepreneur, if you don't get that stuff, then good luck.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it works in the professional game too. It's not all about, you know, our squat cycles and our reps and our sets. Right. It's not. It's trust.
Part of our job.
Yeah, it's
the easiest part of our job. I could agree with you. You know, that as an entrepreneur, it doesn't just mean finding other sources of income. You know, I think that's where people kind of wrap up. I mean, it's sharpening the sword and constantly doing that and constantly challenging your ideals and by being open-minded like you are and getting out and talking to coaches and being willing to ask those questions and not, you know, and not feel like you have to put on this persona that because of you're in the position that you are, you have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's where you can really do damage as a coach. And that's why oftentimes the profession passes by good coaches, you know, because they just, they get too caught up in that ego part. But you have also, as a strength coach, you have done that where you've built another revenue stream and kind of diversified yourself, and you have a facility. You know, talk a little bit about the motivations for having that, and then how you've been able to balance the two without the team, your athletes, or the organization feeling like you're giving any less time to them.
Yeah, you know what? It's definitely not easy. I think one fortunate thing that I should mention is that this team, I don't want to sound arrogant, but they called me for the job. So I said, hey, they said, are you interested? I said, well, yeah, but I have things going on. You know, I have three facilities in Toronto, just outside Toronto, and we're opening a fourth this coming spring. And, you know, I'm not giving those up, you know, and that's, again, I felt like I was in a good spot. The gyms are doing good. I like what I'm doing. Do I like this opportunity too? Yeah, but you know, there's a big but there, and if you check these three boxes, then okay, you know, I'll think about it. But I think how I've managed to keep it all going and keep it all prospering and growing is because of the team. And we talked about off camera about, you know, right now I'm in that leadership mode and just trying to find ways to lead and be a better leader. You know, there's a quote that sticks in my head all the time when I'm dealing with stuff from home is, there are no bad teams, just bad leaders. And it all comes back to me. And so the sharper that I am and the more on point that I am, the better my team's going to be. And it's true. And it's, you know, I got six full-time staff right now, and they're all just killing it, you know, and they really are starting to see, I'm starting to see them prosper because of the things that I've implemented, long-term planning, strategy, scheduling, like that, you know, that doesn't exist, but the balance piece, you know, like making sure they have their wives are happy, their girlfriends are happy, they're doing all those things that they should. You know, so I think it's an ever evolving thing, but having that team of people and treating them the way that they should be treated and you know, focusing on the family portion of it, taking care of people is huge. And obviously something you talked about quite a bit too is my family. You know, I have three kids, I have twin 2-year-olds and a 4-year-old. So my wife is everything. You know, she knows what I'm trying to do. She knows that this is just another step in our family's journey, whatever you want to call it. And she gets it, you know, and that's, I don't know how else to describe it. She just gets it. So it's, it makes things a lot easier. You know, when saying, hey, I got an opportunity to speak somewhere, I'm going to be gone for 3 days.
Right.
She gets it. So that's, you know, those are things that it's hard to explain how grateful, but that's what it is. It's team, it's family, it's having somebody like that on your side.
You know, I think people sometimes fail to realize what those types of things going on when you have diversified yourself and you are creating and putting all this time and effort into, you know, filling these different buckets and these different roles so that your family can be in the position to where you can provide, you know, for your family in those periods of transition and things on those lines. But it's also very empowering, you know, when a team calls you and you have, you know, things going on, you know, then you have a little bit more leverage like you did. And you weren't trying to take advantage of anybody. But what you did is you made the big time where you're at. You made it so that it was hard to leave that position or leave wherever you're at, or that you weren't willing to compromise on some of the things that you were willing to leave. And while you're there, you're allowed to be the person that you want to be, because you know that if you wanted to, you could walk away and be okay. You know, and I think too many coaches, you know, they take these jobs. And I know great coaches that are in their 40s, that are in their 50s, that, you know, they're taking these jobs and they're compromising either their morals, or they're compromising their values, or they're compromising what, you know, their integrity or just their whatever, to appease coaches, administrators, or whatever, whoever you want to deal with. And I think what happens, you know, when you do have some of these other buckets filled, you know, you can walk in there, be the person you want to be, and have that complete confidence so that you can do what you love to do, which is focus on the athlete.
Yeah, and you're right. And it's definitely, it's not perfect, but you said it, I had leverage. And I think a lot of guys in our field, and guys and girls in our field, you only get a few times when you have that leverage. And it came at a time where I said, you know what, I don't have to take this job. There's no have to here. Business is going well. I'm happy with what I'm doing. I was starting to teach at a university. I was, you know, we have a facility within a university in Oshawa, Ontario, and it was starting to grow, and, you know, whatever. I was happy. It was, you know, well, I'm never happy, but, you know, it was going the way it was going. And then this came up, and I said, wow, this could be really good. This could be really good for me personally. It could be a nice adventure for our family, opportunity, whatever you want to call it. And, hey, this couldn't hurt the business either, you know. Sure. So, that leverage is massive.
Well, I think what you just said there, I think I want to pull that out and make sure everybody heard that, was that you're never happy, you know. And, you know, you're happy, obviously, with your family and your situation and all those types of things. But what you said there was essentially that you're constantly looking to continue to get better or find ways to provide for your family. And not just from a professional standpoint, but, you know, by you doing as much reading on leadership as you've done, with you probably, I would imagine, you know, working as hard on your family as you are on, you know, leadership or your profession, those things have been fruitful for you as well. And I think that's what happens as coaches. Sometimes we get the dream job, we get the NHL job or the NFL job or whatever, and we, you know, we're like, that's it, we've arrived, you know. And all of a sudden, when you put all your eggs in that one basket, and that basket is taken away somehow, some way, be it losing season, be it a change at the top, be it, you know, you're not doing a good job, whatever it is, you know, then all of a sudden you get kind of pushed out of the profession, you know, because you didn't have a backup plan, or you didn't have some diversification. And so, you know, what you've done there, I think, is brilliant. What advice would you give for a coach, you know, that maybe they don't have anything else going right now, you know, but they're coaching and they're maybe at a prominent school, or you know, they've done well as a strength and conditioning coach. What would be an area that you would say would be a small win for them to create some diversification?
Get a mentor. I think that's a huge one. I continue to have incredible ones in my life. And you know, don't take another certification, but I don't know. I just, you know, you fill that bucket like you mentioned, but don't overflow it with however many vowels you can put beside your name. It really doesn't mean anything to me anyways, but the mentor piece is huge. Find someone who is maybe not where you want to be, but find someone who is someone who, you know, who gets it. And that's tough. It's tough to find somebody that take you down the right path. I think when it comes to coaching, you better be reading. You better be reading a lot. And like you brought it up in the book, again, I just was re-listening to it yesterday about, you know, don't just read squat books. don't just listen. I listen to a lot of my stuff because every time we fly, I just put on a book or a podcast or whatever and just go, yeah, I set up a little office in the sky and I just work because it's my time to be, you know, no one else is bothering me and, you know, whatever. I can kind of just check out a little bit or check in. But I think that's, you better be working on other stuff other than strength conditioning, whether it's leadership, whether it's business, whether it's, you know, things that you don't know how to do. You better be working on your weaknesses. And that's, for me, I've always struggled with the organizational stuff and structure. And that's why I read a lot of Robin Sharma. I read a lot of, even Tony Robbins, you know, I just watched that movie on him. Wow. Yeah. It's just incredible. Yeah. You know, so get outside of that comfort zone, and everybody says that, but if it's true, you know, and put yourself in situations where, you know, like I'm doing a lot more speaking now, which is at first scared the hell out of me, but, you know, I really, really enjoy it now. So it's, you know, do things that are going to make you more well-rounded, which some people may not agree with, but I think it's true. I consider myself well-rounded, you know, or I'm working on it. It's a work in progress. But it's true. You have to be able to wear a couple different hats and wear them well.
Right, right. No, I couldn't agree with you more on that. Well, man, I know you got to get going to practice here. We end the show with some resources. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Best piece of coaching. I would say just listen more. Listen more. There are no absolutes. You better be listening to your athletes.
What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Book, I have to go start with Why. That was a huge game changer for me. I remember reading it cover to cover on the plane, and I wrote about a 4-page email to my staff and just challenged them, challenged myself, and really redefined what we do.
Sure.
And, you know, at the end of it, I said, throughout the email, I said, we coach. That's what makes us different, you know, and it was a whole mantra that now we're seeing it kind of roll out, which is pretty cool. But that book it sparked something. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, it's great. Simon Sinek.
Yeah, great, unreal. Website, Altus 360. It just came out. It's like a coach's site, I guess, with, you know, videos and presentations. And I'm a big fan of Dan Pfaff and everything that they're doing there at Altus. And I think it's a great resource for $200 a year, like, right, you know, pennies, for some incredible information. I've already watched a whole bunch. His one presentation on resiliency, every young coach should watch that because it's just, yeah, they need to watch it. app, I can't remember which one I said there. I can't remember. Did I write it down there, what I said?
Oh, I don't. I haven't even looked at it, to be honest with you.
Man. Oh, how could I forget? I work with Under Armour. So I've been with Under Armour for about 10 years. So UA Record. It may not be for athletes necessarily, but former athletes or wannabe athletes like myself, it's fantastic.
Okay.
You know, it lets you track weight, body fat, heart rate, you know, everything. It's just, I don't know, it kind of kicks you in the butt when you need a kick in the butt. And I think it's one of the best fitness apps out there. And it's really cool, interactive. So I use it a ton.
No, it's good. Those are all three good resources, man. Well, I know you got to get going. I appreciate you being on the show and going about your business the way you are. I mean, obviously I think the more that we talk about those three areas, you know, that technician, that manager, and that entrepreneur, and building out each of those aspects of our careers, you know, the better off we're going to be as coaches. And you've obviously done that, and a wealth of resource, information there. And I know you're willing to. I mean, it sounds like you're speaking more and sharing more and things on those lines. And so I just appreciate that, man. I really respect that and appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest as well as our sponsors for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.